Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, just yesterday we talked about Republicans and Democrats coming together unanimously in the House of Representatives on Wednesday night to defeat the president's budget proposal 414-0. We saw more bipartisanship on Thursday. It wasn't unanimous, but it was good enough. All the Republicans voting against the president's plan to invoke and impose tax hikes on big oil companies, and there were four reasonable Democrats that went along with them. Begich of Alaska, Landrieu of Louisiana, Ben Nelson of Nebraska, for sure. And I know he's not running again, but at least I think he's trying to salvage a chance for Bob Kerry that probably won't work. So the president, once again, being denied, this time with help from his own party.
Yeah, a couple of thoughts on this. The first is that, as you mentioned, it's both Ben Nelson and Jim Webb are not running for reelection. So theoretically, you could argue that that's a factor in their lack of party loyalty on this. But also, like this, presumably, even if they think this vote would not play well in Nebraska or Virginia, well, what the heck do they care? They're not running again. So it kind of is interesting that they did not feel free to vote with the president in their states. The opposition from Democrats in Alaska and Louisiana isn't that surprising, considering how those are oil-producing states. But I think it's kind of interesting that Obama's whole – first of all, I find it maddening that Obama's approach to high gas prices is to eliminate tax deductions for oil companies. In other words, these are things that, you know, that oil companies get to do, basically do deductions they get to take for the depreciation and the value of their equipment. These are kind of obscure provisions of the tax code. But basically, if you repeal these deductions, oil companies will have to pay more taxes. This does nothing to bring down oil prices. This does nothing to impact the price at the pump. This is all designed about Obama saying, well, if you're angry at oil gas prices, let's punish those oil companies. Let's make them pay. It puts more money in Obama's pocket. It doesn't necessarily put more money, or I should say the federal government's pocket. It doesn't put any more money in the pockets of consumers. It did not succeed. The two main senators, Snow and Collins, voted for it. So, you know, there was, you could say there was bipartisan support. but I think it says something that that this is one, that this was his best move he saw on the gas price issue, and the two, that more than a few Democrats just kind of rolled their eyes and could not, you know, go along with it.
Yeah, we'll take it. We got a lot more of these votes coming up on critical issues. And Jim, do you get the sense that Ben Nelson regrets his health care vote? I do. just a little. But of course, the president isn't really concerned too much about his legislative agenda, only in so much as it affects his reelection chances. Because let's face it, that's what he's really all about this year and has been for the past 3+ years. And according to the polls, he's got probably a little bit of an edge right now, and it seems to have a little bit of an edge in some of the swing states. And now I think we've found out a little bit of a reason why, Jim, as you pointed out to me this morning, it's all these Republican governors in critical swing states who are doing such a good job that the economic picture, the unemployment rate, is getting a lot better. And therefore, that not only bodes well for those governors and their approval ratings, but it bodes well for the president, even though he had very little to do with it. We were looking at Virginia, where the unemployment rate's down to 5.7%, which in normal times isn't spectacular, but compared to the national average in a lot of other states, it is. And then you start looking at some of these other states that are considered swing states. In Ohio, in the past year, it's gone from 8.9% to 7.6%. Michigan, darn near 2 points, from 10.7 to 8.8%. In Florida, 10.8 down to 9.4. I mean, overall, again, these numbers historically aren't great, but those are huge leaps in a year's time. And unfortunately, it looks like the president might be reaping the benefits of that as well.
Precisely. And it's one of those things where it's worth noting, in Virginia, the unemployment rate never got quite as bad as it did in most of the rest of the country. There's a couple of reasons for that. One of which being that Northern Virginia obviously is close to the nation's capital, and an increase in federal government spending, like you saw during the stimulus, generally starts filtering out to the government workers in Northern Virginia. And of course, you know, the public sector employment has barely been impacted by the recession, whereas private sector employment just got thrashed by the recession in 2008-2009. But 2009, Virginia elects Bob McDonnell, and he's, you know, his whole slogan was Bob's for Jobs, and he's been doing everything humanly possible to bring jobs to Virginia. It seems like the one email I get from him at least once a week is some company has chosen to relocate in Virginia. So in light of that, it's not that unsurprising to see Virginia has an unemployment rate down to 5.7%. That is about normal nationally for the Bush years. We basically had unemployment between 4% and 6% for the entirety of the presidency of George W. Bush. So if the Romney message is Obama isn't working, the Democrats aren't working, the economy is tanking under Obama, it's not going to work here nearly as effectively as it will in places like Nevada or California or the Rust Belt or places like that. And as you noted, Wisconsin's seen job gains in the past year. Ohio's seen job gains in the past year. Obama is probably going to attempt to reap the benefits of this. And look, some of this is a national economy improving, although I think very, very slowly. I think James Pitakakis is calling it the single worst recovery from a recession in history. This is going to be a challenge for Romney, presuming he is the nominee, and for Republicans in general, to observe, well, look, why are we seeing these job creations in these states? What's happening here? At one point, when Obama was insisting that the stimulus had created or saved X million jobs, half of them had been in Texas. And so, to me, that says a lot more about Rick Perry and policies that the state government of Texas is doing, as well as perhaps some just general factors of the economy of Texas, the types of industries that are there, et cetera. Whenever the economy goes well, politicians are always going to try to take credit for it. And if the economy is very slowly improving nationally and really improving in particular states, then the Republicans have to be very, very powerful and effective in their arguments to say, look, these are the policies that are working. The national policies that we're seeing from Washington are not working, and here's why. And it's going to be a challenge for him.
Yeah, it certainly is. And before the president even suggests this, I just want to put it on the record, Jim, that Wisconsin dropping from 7.6% to 6.9%, you cannot chalk that up entirely to the master lock plant being fully staffed, as the president would probably like to contend. You mentioned Joe Biden and the stimulus and saved and created jobs and recovery summer. It was just yesterday we were talking about Joe Biden and his great thanks to Dr. Pepper at the community college in Iowa, which I'm sure helps keep students awake as they study for their tests and so forth. But Biden not letting another day go by without another bizarre statement in a speech, this one at a Democratic fundraiser in Chicago. Surprisingly, the president wasn't at this one in his hometown, but surrounded by the city's movers and shakers, Byron York reports, Biden praised former Mayor Richard M. Daley and then said, quote, "I never had an interest in being a mayor because that's a real job. You have to produce. That's why I was able to be a senator for 36 years." And obviously he's trying to be funny there and tell a joke. But I think underneath there, Jim, there's still a little bit of a antipathy from Biden and perhaps Obama, too, that even in their own jobs, they don't want to be very productive because the production class, that's the evil 1%.
You know, I looked at that comment. You're right. We really shouldn't jump on Joe Biden for a for making an argument that is designed to be self-effacing or self-deprecating. What I do kind of interesting else in there is he made an assessment in one of his comments recently that if Obama loses re-election, it will be because of something that happens in the European Union or something that happens in the Middle East. Apparently, he genuinely believes the administration is doing just fine here in America and that only some foreign crisis could end up causing that. Now, this is going on in a week when Obamacare certainly looks much less likely to be upheld by the Supreme Court than it did a week ago. Unemployment is still 8.3%. A123, which is another one of those energy firms that got a bunch of money in the stimulus, is financially on its last legs and laying people off. The housing market has not recovered. Gas prices are approaching $4 a gallon across the country. It could hit $5. Where do the good policies start? When do the good times start? We're looking at all this, and this came up because Kevin Eder is a guy on Twitter who's kind of sarcastic. He saw this comment from Biden. He said, look, it's going to be because of the economy and the general sense of malaise that's going to be what causes Obama to lose re-election, not the EU and the Middle East. And I was like, no, Kevin, it's gas prices and Obamacare. That's what's going to do it. Now, somebody else said, no. It's something. So there's plenty of policy failures to choose from. And so maybe we shouldn't totally miscount the possibility of Obama mishandling the Middle East or mishandling, a financial crisis in the EU slowing down the global economy. Look, those could be factors, but there's going to be a lot in it. And the fact that Biden is even just thinking out loud, and I realize a lot of people are kind of, scoffing at the notion of Biden and thinking in the same sentence. The idea of thinking about why they could lose. Well, gee, you think they're seeing some ominous indicators over there?
Yeah, maybe just a few. I think it's all of the above. I mean, there's no way you could fit the reasons Obama should lose on Twitter in 140 characters. You really have to abbreviate well.
I completely concur, Greg, and I just observe that when you say all of the above, one of the things in the all of the above would be the so-called all of the above energy policy that in fact includes a whole bunch of things, making it thus not all of the above.
Jim, I know you're out next week. Have a great time on your spring break, and we'll talk to you on the week from Monday.
You know, nothing should happen next week, right? No news.
Oh, I'm sure nothing will happen. Yeah, I'm out Monday and Tuesday too. So, good luck to our fill-ins as the world explodes. I'm sure on Monday and Tuesday. Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Be sure to tune in Monday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.